Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special first look at the fifth season of the Holistic Matters podcast series. My name's Kara Cradle, and I'm here with nutrition scientist and former collegiate athlete, Dr. Christine Polly. And we're thrilled to be talking with two endurance athletes who are on the brink of two exciting and inspiring adventures.
Hi, guys. I'm Dr. Christine Polly, and I'm thrilled to be joining Kara to talk to these amazing athletes. In just a few days, on Sunday, May 30th, 2021, Cyril Darameaux, a world record-holding rower, will attempt to kayak, solo and unsupported, all the way across the Pacific Ocean from California to Hawaii. Just a few days after, Carlo Ficino, Cyril's friend, training coach, and also a world record holder, will attempt a new speed record for a rowboat crossing, solo and unsupported, also across the Pacific Ocean from California to Hawaii.
We'll talk with Cyril and Carlo about the differences between their two journeys, the role nutrition plays in their physical and mental health, and how they regulate the cycle of training, performing, and recovering.
It's a great, inspiring conversation with two wonderful athletes and people that we're excited to share with all of you. Let's get started.
We're here today with two endurance athletes who are both on the brink of amazing record-breaking journeys. At the end of May, Cyril Darameaux, a world record-holding rower, will attempt to kayak solo and unsupported all the way across the Pacific Ocean from California to Hawaii. Cyril, can you tell us a bit more about your journey?
Oh, I would be happy. It's going to be an adventure of a lifetime. Taking off on a solo boat is quite an adventure in itself, but on a new vessel that is not very common to cross ocean is going to make it just unforgettable. And so it's a kayak that I built out of passion, made it happen. It's a dream I had in a little piece of my head that said, okay, you should do this. Why? I don't know. And it took me 3 years to make happen. In 33 days, I'm taking off from San Francisco. And we'll see. The ocean's waiting.
So right around the same time, Cyril's friend, training coach, and world record holder, Carlo Ficino, will attempt a new speed record for a rowboat crossing, solo and unsupported, of the Pacific Ocean from California to Hawaii. So Carlo, can you tell us a little bit more about your journey specifically?
Yeah. So, I was a rower in college. So rowing has always been a very strong passion of mine. After college, I got into just doing endurance events, cycling, running endurance events. And the idea of crossing an ocean on your own power is something that is sort of the perfect blend of those two, you know, the perfect blend of the rowing and the endurance. And so doing this challenge is really, you know, like Cyril mentioned, it's this dream that's kind of in the back of your head that is always there. And it's amazing to get the opportunity to actually, you know, put it in paper and get it down and doing it this summer. So very excited about it. Yeah.
Amazing. Awesome. So tell us, what are the differences between these two? So Cyril, you're kayaking, and Carlo, you're rowing. So what's the difference?
So mine's is much harder. because I'm tougher, you know, basically that comes down to it.
Yeah, it's exactly what Cyril just said in some degree is there's not many people who have ever kayaked an ocean. So his job is much harder in the sense that he's one of, I don't know, maybe five people. How many people have been on an ocean in a kayak? So he's like a true pioneer in what he's doing. Ocean rowing has been around for quite some time. So although the concept is foreign to the majority of people, there are, you know, a fairly large, a long history of people being on an ocean in a rowing boat. So what I'm doing is different. The movements are different. So he's more upper body using his arms, although his kayak is a little unique. But rowing, it's more your lower body doing the work, and you're just sort of holding on to the oars with your upper body. So your lower body, your legs and your back are doing the majority of the work. So that's kind of the fundamental differences is, mm-hmm. between the two, the kayaking motion versus the rowing motion. That's what sort of distinguishes the two.
Yeah, so there's differences between two boats that are completely different technique. I think at the end of the day, we both decided to be in an adventure on the ocean. The ocean is going to be the same. They don't care who's riding it, you know. So we both have boats that are very well made for ocean. They're self-righting, so this is something in common. We use the same technique to be safe on the water, namely a sea anchor to put the boat perpendicular to the waves. And we both value safety because we want to be doing more and more of those adventures. Now, I chose the kayak because that's my sport. I'm not a rower and I love to look in front of me. You know, that's what rowers
do. You know, it's coming, huh? Yeah.
And that's my sport. I love it. So I wanted to find a vessel that would be similar to my sport. Now, it's true that it's going to be difficult because the cockpit is smaller. And then the cabin is smaller, and because you're closer to the water, you could be wet more often. So their skin integrity, they're all different set challenges. Now I go for the adventure. I don't know if I'm a trailblazer, like you said. I feel like I'm not that kind of an adventurer, but yeah, I'll be maybe one of the first leading the way from others. And you're going for a different goal, which is speed record, and you're going for the performance. I go for the adventure. It's different goals, but being alone and unsupported make it challenging for both of us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the time difference between the two? One take longer than the other?
It'll be really interesting, I think. I think on flat water, Cyril is by far a faster boat. It's just a lighter weight boat. It is a much sleeker boat, but you know, sleekness when you get out into 20, 30 foot swell is a totally different scenario. So my boat is a much bigger boat, much wider boat, not quite so sleek comparatively, but
a bit heavier too. Yeah,
heavier, but it's probably more stable. So when the seas get really rough, when the swells get really big, I'll be bobbing up and down and going along, and it'll be interesting to see how.
Yeah, I'll probably have to stop for safety or.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. I think, I think the rowing is more efficient. Your oars are further out to the water, and you could pull with your leg in such an efficient way that it's just linear, you know. So that the paddling, there's a rotation of the spine, and there's so many parts that are involved: the shoulder, the elbow, the wrist. I mean, same as rowing as well. But we'll see. I mean. We are both competitive. And we were. So.
Are you going to wave to each other?
You know, here's the thing that you didn't say in your introduction is that we're buddies because we actually rode together 5 years ago from the same crossing, the same ocean from Monterey to Hawaii. We got the Guinness record for 39 days of crossing. And that's how we met, just because we were in the same crew.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So now you guys are doing it just solo.
Yeah,
but it's fantastic that we'll be in the water at the same time. You know,
right.
That'll help me a lot. Like, I'm going through a rough patch. You know, he's you know, feeling the same wind, same waters, and yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain comfort level to know. I mean, we won't see each other out on the water. It's such a big ocean that we'll never be at a point where we're close enough to see each other. But it's amazing to just have that sort of mental reassurance, like, hey, there's somebody else out here doing through the exact same thing that I'm going through. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun to kind of have that.
And we can communicate, and we'll text each other on the satellite device.
Awesome.
And see how we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you need a rope, I'll come and get you. Oh,
there you go.
That's the opposite because he's my coach, you know. So, and I can't tell too much bad because tomorrow is going to tell me to run a few more miles.
Right, right.
Got to keep them in line, huh?
Exactly.
Well, very cool. So, I'm curious. Names of the boats. Have you guys named your boat and what's the meaning behind it? Does it have meaning behind it?
Okay, so I named my boat Valentine. And Valentine is the name of my sister. And I was thinking of, usually vessels have women's name or female name. And I decided Valentine because we're five kids in the family. I've got three other brothers. And of course I had to, you know, name Valentine. She's a dreamer like me. And she loves to sing and she goes after her dreams singing. We're both passionate and we're very close, obviously. And I think she'll take care of me if I name the boat after her.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, well, I mean, one thing with boats is that typically they're named at one time. And I bought my boat from somebody else. So the boat came with a name. And kind of respecting just sort of the history of the boat and the history of the name, I'm going to keep the name. It's Liv, L-I-V, and it's Norwegian for shelter and protection, as well as life. But it's in Norwegian, it's very meaningful of being sheltered and protected. And so that name really fit. And the boat has been across the Atlantic twice. And also was a girl rode it around Lake Michigan. So it's had its fair share of oceans and water to cross. And I'm excited to kind of give it its next chapter.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Very poetic. I like that.
Very poetic.
Well, you need this. It's kind of spiritual, isn't it? That boat is a personality. And who was that you as a coach that tell me you got to go out on the water and kind of understand her personality and her character? And I think if I have to give her a character, it would probably be a whale, because she's pretty heavy and once you get her going, you know, she's slow to go, but once you get going, she could withstand the bad weather. And I think the ocean is her playground, so that would be a whale for me.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't quite thought of what characteristic I would give my boat yet. But my boat spirit animal. My boat spirit animal is in the workshop right now. So maybe once I get my boat onto the water, I'll choose a spirit animal. But I did talk to all the previous owners, and it's just amazing to hear their story and their affection for the boat. They all were extremely excited to hear, like, oh my gosh, you're going to row Liv. Like, oh, I have such fond memories. And, you know, it was really neat to connect with the previous boat owners and get their intake and get their feedback of what their experience was. So I'm excited to, you know, kind of continue that tradition of Liv, of the boat, and now row across the Pacific in it.
That's wonderful. Yeah, take a little bit of history with you.
For sure.
Well, cool. So let's get into a little bit of the nutrition side. So you guys talked about your boats, the expedition. So nutritionally, I guess, how are you guys carrying your nutrition with you? Because it's solo, unsupported, so you have to carry everything with you that on this trip for the 40, 50 days, however long it takes to cross the ocean. So what does that look like for you in terms of food?
So like you started exactly right. The first one is practicality. My crossing is estimated 65 to 70 days, so I have to carry it on my boat. That means it's going to be about 240 pounds of food, 6,000 calories a day. So the lightest type of nutrition that we can carry is going to be the best. So one comes to mind. The first is freeze-dried food, just because the weight to nutrition ratio is the highest, but it still is voluminous. That's one of the elements. The other ones could be for practicality. If you can't boil water or not even make water with the water maker, another very easy ingredient would be a bar that you just open the wrap and you just eat it. So others could be related to taste. It can't be just about calories. So a little pleasure, if you love dried fruit, whatever, mango, pineapple, put that. It could be a whole nut. So you have little treats or even candies. Variety is crucial, I think. you don't want to eat the same thing just because that eating is one of the most important pleasures of rowing, isn't it? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Even
yeah.
when we're rowing and eating, we're talking about what we're going to eat when we're back home. It's all about eating, eh?
It is. I mean, there's, you know, you're out rowing for so many hours during the day that when you get a break, you know, food is a very comforting thing to be eating. And so it's really something where the food that you bring, you want to make sure that it's high quality so that you're really having that enjoyment when you're not rowing. Because in all intents and purposes, I don't want to sugarcoat it, but it's miserable out there. You know, you're getting baked by the sun. It's extremely hot. You're wet. You're tired. You're having to row for 10 to 15 hours a day. You know, it's if you're in that kind of misery is I think a lot of fun for me. I don't think it's a lot of fun for everybody, but it's something where the opportunity when you get a break to have good food is really key. So we put a lot of thought into the nutrition that we're bringing or the types of food that we're bringing so that we are having things that we can enjoy while we're out there. And, you know, my boat is a little bit different because it's bigger, so I can bring a lot more food. Cyril really has to manage weight because his boat is so much smaller, weight and volume.
Yeah, I think the pleasure side is crucial. I read so many books about ocean rowing, and one of those was Ed Gillette, who actually did the kayaking expedition from Monterey to Hawaii back in 1987. And every time he would feel low in terms of his mental attitude, he said, before I take any decision or try to see what the situation, I would eat. And then after eating, your thought process is completely different. You're more making better decisions, I think, yeah?
Like the Snickers commercials. Yes.
Right. Yeah. 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 Well, nutrition fuels not only your body but your mind too. So that makes sense. So, in your experience, or like for you personally, my next question is: nutrition and eating is definitely like a pleasure, especially when you're out on the ocean. But how important is it for you physically and mentally? And you just kind of touched on that with the mental aspect, making sure you eat something before you make a decision. But like what are you, I guess, what nutritionally are you focusing on when you go on an adventure like this? Are you focusing on macronutrients like carbohydrates, fats, proteins? And like, what does that look like? And then are you looking for micronutrients as well or not really? And just what does that look like? And I know it's limited because of, you know, the convenience aspect. It has to, and it has to be something that will last 50, 60 days. So what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think we're limited to some degree with the freeze-dried foods and things that we're getting. Obviously, there's a lot of different types of freeze-dried food. So we're looking for, you know, the healthier freeze-dried foods and some of the premium brands and some of the other brands that are, I would say the ingredients aren't as high quality. So to me, I've looked very closely at what those freeze-dried foods are in an effort to have quality ingredients. But as far as like micronutrients, I think it's very difficult to really get those out of the freeze-dried foods. So that's where we're really relying on things like the Possible Bar that's coming along. You know, that's where I feel like we're able to get those micronutrients that we might be missing in the freeze-dried foods. You know, that kind of knowledge and that kind of bar coming along with us is really key, because in our previous events, we didn't quite have something like that. And, you know, I think you could see that over the course of extended, you know, 40 days, 39 days that it took us, our bodies took a really big toll. And so there's some people's bodies took more than others. And there's a certain amount of weight loss that can happen. So there's a lot that I'm excited for this row, because I think it'll be different in the sense that I'm bringing higher quality foods. And that'll be a real interest to how my body performs over the course of my row now versus how it did when we did the crossing in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, the thing is, on land, your taste buds and your what you want to eat is completely different than in the water. I remember my first crossing Carlo, I didn't want anything fancy. I didn't want teriyaki something. I didn't want sweet. I didn't want salt. I wanted something plain, like just basic. And so for this one, obviously I need to mix and match different brands, but for me, the variety is going to be key. I don't want to have the same meal over and over, especially if I don't like it. Maybe I'll miss it. Oh, this one, I wish I had 20 of those. But in terms of macro, something happens to your body. It goes into survival mode where you're rowing, so your legs are going to be fine, and some other muscles that are you don't use are going to be starting to atrophy. And for me, it's going to be the same. The muscles, like maybe the biceps, I don't use my arms at all. I might be skinny on those muscles because the body is going to say, I need the energy to go those ones that work 10 hours a day. So you do need some protein in to sustain the muscle recovery and not have muscle loss. But at the same time, there's other nutrients that are very easily accessible for digestion, like the fat content, like for example, the MCT oil or any kind of fat really, or nuts have good fat in them, and that's also crucial. And carbs are also very easily digested. You can extract easier than the proteins. I remember in the end, we had some meals with a lot of proteins and it was so hard to digest. We had to drink more water because the proteins are harder to digest after 40 days. Yeah.
Interesting. I guess let's take it back a little bit and talk about what your training looks like. What is your cycle of training, recovery, competition? Like, what does that look like for you? Where do you excel? Where do you struggle in terms of different kinds of training for like an event like this? And how do you recover from putting in lots of hours a week, you know, probably 20 plus hours a week trying to train for something like this? How does recovery look in training?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think to some degree, real life dictates my recovery and my training. So, you know, I work full time and that plays a big part into when I can train or how I can train. Recovery, you know, sometimes is just the fact that I've got too much stuff going on with work and I have to take the day off. Or, you know, I find that it's 11 o'clock at night by the time I get done with work, and then, you know, okay, this is going to be a good rest day. So a lot somehow depends on how I'm blending my work schedule along with my training schedule. And that's probably the biggest challenge for me. But I do find, you know, the weekends I really bulk up on the number of hours that I'm putting in. I'm not 25, so I feel like I have to be.
How old are you?
46. Uh-huh. So I feel like I really have to be cognizant of my body. So I, you know, I see a chiropractor who's amazing and has really helped keep me in kind of tip-top shape, I feel. So he's a big role in my recovery, I feel, because he's keeping my body fresh. And you know, so I'd say a lot of that recovery is based on my work-life balance. But in an ideal world, you know, you would be kind of constantly doing a bulk session of your training, kind of recovering a little bit, tapering just a little bit, then bulking back up on your training and recovering and doing this sort of sinusoidal like wave of training in sort of an ideal world. But
yeah, I think it's good to have a plan, whatever the plan. There's nobody who's going to say this is the one way to train. Depends on your schedule for work-life balance. It depends on your body type. It depends on your experience and your technique. So if you need to work more on the technique, work on your technique. So for us, Carlo is actually my coach. So we sat down maybe 3 months ago and we said, okay, how about we do that in January, that in February, that in March or April, and that would be the volume we want to achieve. You do want to put your body under different stress, but you have to listen to it as well. So if some days I had planned to do a 20-hour week and I actually felt low energy or I didn't feel right, then okay, or taper it down, and next week make sure you do those miles that you had planned. So it gives you yourself some slack for sure. For me, the one target, it's advice that Sean Morley, my friend, told me, is like, your training goal is to arrive and start the first day healthy and injury free. And I think the body will adapt to whatever conditions we have to do. There's no way to train for 14 hours a day of a daily routine of workout for 70 days. So another advice that was given by Scott Donaldson, who crossed the Tasman Sea from Australia to New Zealand in a kayak, he said, listen, if you're a complete novice in kayaking, but I put you in a boat, and I tell you, if you have to paddle those 10 hours a day or you don't make it, you're going to do it. Your body's going to adapt. Maybe it's going to take that novice 3 weeks to adapt, but your body is so surprisingly adaptable that after 3 weeks, you're going to do this 10 hours a day, and you're going to be so surprised by how far you can go. So he says, now your goal is to decrease that period of adaptation of three weeks to 1 day or 2 days. That means you have to put your tendons and joints and muscles under stress beforehand, so that when you start and you demand them that kind of workload, it feels like an easy adaptation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Training yourself to be ready for that, and training your muscles, and most importantly, your mind as well.
Yeah, you just touched on it. The mind, I think, is almost the harder part to train. I mean, getting yourself mentally prepared for the isolation, getting yourself mentally prepared for just the hours of the day that you're going to be, you know, doing your effort, whether it's paddling or rowing. And then being able to survive the weather, because you're constantly getting wet and you're in this little tiny cabin, and you know, so there's all this mental part that really goes into it that I think plays a really big role in how effective and how, you know, sort of successful you are in your journey is how you really adapt to that mental side.
Yeah, definitely. And Carla, I like how you pointed out, I mean, it's so interesting. You work a full work week. Like, this is not your primary thing, is going out and training every day. You work a full-time job as well. So scheduling around that, and just, it's amazing that you're, you know, able to schedule around that and make this work. And it's very cool and very inspiring.
Well, there's no excuse. If you want to do it, you can't want it halfway, right?
Yep.
And there's people that put the work in to make it happen, because they have the fire, that passion, and others didn't give excuses. It's kind of hard to say it, but life is as a way to hold you on to things sometimes you don't want to, like you have a mortgage and you have a family and then you have a full-time job and you can't travel. You know, there's so many excuses that one can do. And sometimes people ask me, how do you do it? And I say, I can show you, but probably when I tell you what you have to do. Like, you want to be as fit as you want? Okay, stop alcohol, zero sugar, stop like white bread, stop fried food, stop soft drinks. I say, no, I can't. I don't. Well, you don't want it bad enough. Sorry. Yeah, you know, it's, and like when I did my first crossing, I went to see my boss and I say, look, can I take a 2 months off? I need 15 days before the crossing and then 40 days and 15 days after. I say, okay, but you need to accumulate the vacation. For 3 years, I didn't take any vacation, so I could take it all at one time. Then when I came back, I got fired for some reason. Because he said, we actually don't need you. You did such a good job at giving all the responsibility to other people that we don't need you. That's when I started my own companies. But don't you agree that it takes a toll, but it's a decision. You want to live that kind of life.
Huh? Yeah. I mean, there's sacrifices, you know, and those sacrifices are something that you you have to be okay to make. You sacrifice some of your family, you sacrifice your friends, you sacrifice, you know, some of your work life, and all those things have to make sense for you to, you know, want your goal so bad that it's worth that sacrifice. So, you know, like Cyril said, it's, what we're doing, I don't think is unachievable for, you know, anybody who wants to do it, but there's, you know, you have to be willing to make those sacrifices in order to get yourself to the start line. And I think that's where a lot of people, those sacrifices are and obligations that you have in normal day life really, you know, sometimes dictate how you keep putting something off and off and off. I mean, you know, ideally I would have done this 10 years ago. And I'm here now doing it. So, you know, I'm preaching, but I'm also a victim of my own message, you know, in that aspect.
Very awesome. You guys are very inspirational. Can you talk to us about like what food or nutrition, what kind of nutrition support do you absolutely rely on? Maybe it's like a specific food that you just have to have like every single day or at least like once a week or something. What is that kind of
chocolate
thing? Chocolate. Okay. I'm with you there.
Well, for me, it just goes along to my day. I think I can eat anything as long as it's pretty much whole food. I don't like processed foods in general, so that's one ingredient that I'm looking for. But I'll eat anything that is in front of me, basically. But before working out, I like just to have something simple and easy to digest. So I'll take an apple and a banana, and then I'll go work out for 2 hours in the morning. Then I'll come back, and I'll have a good plate of cereals, of oatmeal, or something more consistent. Mm-hmm. And I like to put a bit of coconut oil to get me all the way to noon. And then I have a good lunch. Sometimes I have to skip. I'll just get a sandwich somewhere, mm-hmm. Get second workout on. And dinner, I've changed something. I've tried not to eat meat for dinner. If I have meat, I have it for lunch. And it seems to have regulated my digestion very well. I'm much more regular, and my girlfriend is vegetarian, so it works for the evening. And for me, again, like fruit, veggies, and whole foods is my go-to.
I'm a big fan of oatmeal, so I make my own oatmeal. I love putting, you know, packing it full of chia seeds and pumpkin seeds and flax seeds and sunflower seeds. And so, you know, I usually start my day off that way with oatmeal.
Got to get those healthy fats in. That's awesome.
Definitely.
With all those seeds.
Definitely. And then sometimes it's just seasonal because, you know, I've got a persimmon tree, and that's the season for that's in the late fall. An avocado tree that's ripe right now. So I've literally been eating like 3 or 4 avocados a day just because I have those many because of the tree. So, you know, some of it's just seasonal as to what's in season and what's available.
I need to come over to your house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Avocados are my weakness.
How about cheese? Oh, I got to have my cheese every day. A little cheese when you're cooking, you know, a little crackers and cheese and a glass of wine. That's perfect.
True, spoken by the true Frenchman.
Yes.
And then what challenges do you guys experience with making and following like nutritional plans? If you know, what is the most challenging on a day-to-day basis for you nutritionally, or if you're trying to follow something, is there anything that you find that's challenging?
There's the budget apps aspect. I would love to eat fish every day or every other day, but I can't. And then also the cooking of meat that takes time. So I will go with convenience, and what I'll do, I'll supplement it with supplements. Like, for example, I know my omega-3 is not enough, so I'll just complement that. Vitamin D is not enough. I did some blood tests, so I'm very happy just to add it to my diet. And, you know, and the protein, my whole training, we're trying to build muscle as well because I know I'm going to lose some. So in my protein shake, that was adding, you know, banana, peanut butter, and add a scoop of protein. I have no problem adding anything, you know, that I would lack to my normal diet. Gotcha.
Yeah, I think budget is a big one, you know, and then just the ease of finding or, you know, getting to the store, you know, buying organic, which you know, I'm always buying organic if I'm going to be buying fruits and vegetables. So budget does come into play, and I think that's an area where I'm learning more and getting more into, like, am I satisfying sort of the nutritional needs versus, like, hey, let me just eat what I have in at the house, and let me just, you know, if there's something in the refrigerator, then that's what I'm going to eat. If there's nothing in the refrigerator, then, you know, like, oh, pasta is super easy, so then I'll eat pasta. But it's, you know, trying to really learn more so that I understand better how the foods are affecting my nutrition, which then, you know, when you look at it as crossing an ocean, your fuel that you're putting in your body is your nutrition. And so if you're not fueling yourself properly, then it's very, you know, easy to take away your fuel for crossing. So now I think it's something that I'm trying to be more cognizant of.
And then what advice do you guys have for everyday athletes or exercise enthusiasts?
Normal people.
What advice? Have fun. Whatever you do, have fun for in your sports, but have fun in, I guess, in the kitchen too. Have fun. I think it's also follow the passion. There's so much that, you know, we do just because we do it. Life is too short.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is to explore your curiosity, right? So if you're curious about, you know, rowing, if you're curious about kayaking, if you're curious about playing pickleball, you know, like, then go try it, right? I mean, it's something where you don't have to be, you know, unfortunately, so many people get caught up in this idea that, like, oh, I'm not an athlete or I'm not a runner. And really everybody is, you know. Mm-hmm. If you walk a 5K, you're an athlete. And so that's something that I think for those people who are out there, there's an intimidation factor. And if I go and I go to a running club, I'm going to feel intimidated, even though I know that I'm a confident runner. I'm going to feel intimidated because it's something that's unknown, and you have to put yourself out there. You have to kind of put yourself out of that comfort zone. And once you do, you know, so much opens up because people are so friendly. People are so welcoming. You have this idea that, you know, I'm not this or I'm not that, but really you are. And it's taking that leap of faith that you can put yourself out of that comfort zone, go try something. Who knows where it's going to, you know, lead to. Had I never gotten into rowing in college, which was a total accident, I never would be in this position. I never would have gotten to row across the Pacific or row across the Arctic. So, you know, it's this amazing thing that has opened up because I put myself out of my comfort zone. And so really for those people who are out there, like, take that leap of faith, try something new, explore your curiosity, and you'll be amazed at how many, you know, sort of doors open up. Mm.
Yeah. So I have advice I give a lot is, you know, you always want to be happy. So how do I do to be happy? Maybe I need a bigger house or a better car or better salary or a bigger job or travels more or less. I need a kid, I need a dog, whatever. It's really hard. There's so many components to make you happy. How do you know what's going to make you happy? So what I say is look for something that makes you vibrate. And remember that last thing you did that you loved. Maybe it was your meal with your friends. Maybe it was running with your dog. Maybe it's going kayaking or rowing, whatever it is. Remember that. Just do more of this. I started kayaking like 10 years ago, and I loved it. So I did it a bit more. I did a race and a bit more. And I loved it. I wanted to be, you know, like you say, I love the people that I met. And I'd be more, I'm not a kayaker, but I'm going to cross the ocean. How cool is that?
Yeah.
And Carla, I read about the mermaid series that you work with.
Yes.
And I didn't know how, like, your involvement with that affects your goals and inspirations in this journey that you're doing now.
Yeah, so it's a business that I started. The Mermaid Series is a women's triathlon and running race series. Our demographic is very much that beginner athlete. So we call all of our participants, we call them mermaid athletes, so that they start to identify themselves right away as an athlete. It's not something that's a themed event or anything like that. It started with a women's triathlon, the swimming, biking, running, hence the name Mermaid. You know, that takes up a huge chunk of my time as an entrepreneur, as a business owner. There's always things that need to get done with a business. So, you know, that involvement takes up a lot of my time in order to get those events organized. But at the same time, I have the ability, if I don't have an event coming up, I have the ability to sort of take some time off. And no events are really going to be happening at the beginning of summer. So sort of all the cards aligned, the events aren't going to be happening this summer. There was a boat available. And so I bought the boat and then now I'm getting ready for the trip. So, and to some degree, you know, I can take that time off because I am my own boss. So that does open up a lot of possibilities that, you know, for me, fortunately, because I am my own boss. Mm-hmm.
And then Cyril, I read on your website that part of the purpose for your trip is to bring awareness to ocean pollution and inspire others to follow their dreams by testing their own limits. And that's a quote from your website, so I'm not attributing that to myself. So can you just tell me a little bit more about that vision and how that is?
Well, I mean, the ocean pollution makes total sense to me because I'm on the water every day. And it just hurts me to see pollution floating around. I pick it up. I was raised in France, and I was lucky to go every summer by the ocean. So going at the beach, you know, you naturally learn to love the beach and love going under and scuba diving. And I was taught, because you're educated, that obviously you don't throw anything on the beach. But I think there was another step, which was when you're walking on the beach and then you see a piece of paper, you could feel free. Like, I didn't throw that paper, but one day I decided that if I didn't pick it up, it would be as bad as if I had thrown it. So you take responsibility for anybody or any pollution as a human being. It's not my responsibility, but it's my responsibility to talk to other people and say, okay, how do we change our behavior? How do we take care of this ocean? So there's a few, there are two nonprofits that I want to raise awareness on. And one, it's on the website. One is doing that, education on rivers and promoting source to sea expeditions, and promoting education on the river and how the river and the ocean are connected. And the second one is doing something that is not very well known, but there's those ghost nets. It's basically when you fish at sea, some fishermen lose the nets and they just get loose, and all around in the ocean they'll be gathering together because they catch each other. And then there's these nets that are just ghost nets, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 tons big. And they're just pollution of the ocean. You never see them because they just go round and round. But what that nonprofit does, they tag them with a GPS, and then they send a big ship and they come back with 40 tons of those ghost nets. So yeah, those two nonprofits are on the website. Now, about following your dreams, and I think this is my personality. That's what I do. I started when I was 25, a trip around the world for 1 year backpacking, and loved it. I said, "What? This is what I want to do. I don't want to work all my life." You know, it's very French. Like, I want to work to live, not live to work. So, and then you see how just by communicating with other people, they can get inspired to do that too and to follow their dreams. And that's very inspiring to see that you can inspire other people. Like this one trip around the world was, so I did it for $7,000, 1 year of traveling. And I took my backpack and went to see that local school of mine, because I'm from a small village in France, 5,000 inhabitants. And like there are 3 schools. And I opened the backpack, these are my shoes, this is the map on the wall, this is the countries I'm going to go, and explain to the kids. 5 years later, so I had moved to the U.S., and this guy, he's 20 something years old, he knocks on my door with 3 other cyclists, and they say, "You know what? You gave me the spark 5 years ago, and now I'm doing the trip around the world on a bicycle." I was like, "Oh my God, I didn't remember the kid," right? He was one of those in the class. And I said, "This is so amazing." So now part of my time in the next 30 days and the last 6 months was to talk to schools and kids, because you never know who you're going to inspire. But one of them is going to come back 10 years from now and say, "You know what? You inspired me. I love it. I love it."
Yeah, I mean, you know, Cyril talking about being inspiring and inspirational. You know, at the beginning of this year, I did not think I was going to be doing a row. I thought I was going to be doing some other things during the summer. And it was through working with Cyril and coaching and seeing him and his enthusiasm for what he was doing that really inspired me to plan my trip. So, you know, it's so incredible how your behavior and how what you're doing really inspires those people around you. And so, you know, I can blame Cyril for my row this summer. It's
well,
true.
You're 46 and not that old. We still have 40 years to do stuff together, my friend. And you're in trouble with me. With Carlo, I would do anything. I mean, you tell me what, let's go to Alaska, anything, Africa, whatever you want. I mean, signing in. Like, I don't even read the letters.
Guys? Yeah. Let's get back from this one. Exactly. We can start playing in the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, well, so fun. Well, thank you guys both for doing this and talking with us. And best of luck. We are so excited for you and can't wait to congratulate you when you get back.
Thank you so
Great.
Much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
A huge thanks to both Cyril and Carlo on joining us for this conversation, and we wish them all the best in their upcoming adventures.
Keep in touch on holisticmatters.com for future podcast episodes about nutrition and physical activity. That's holistic with a W.